All right, one more show, and then I get Asgai out of my hair forever.
2 weeks.
Forever. Hello and welcome to the Exploding Barrel Podcast, presented by the Squadron of Shame, for June 19th, 2009. This is Mike Minotti, and say hi, Asgai.
Hello,
Minotti. And of course, our who's becoming our frequent third chair, George Kokoris, is joining us.
How you guys doing?
Oh, good.
We're all doing good. Hey, you're the one who gets a handle anymore. Your handle is your name to me.
That's
you know
who, me?
Yeah, you.
Oh. Oh, you guys always call me Asgai.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I was like complaining.
Oh, okay.
Just an observation.
Well,
what's
your
point?
Your name is in your handle. That makes
yeah,
it
helps.
Easier to get away with.
That is. Is everyone on the squad, does everyone know it's Asgai now? For a while, we still had people saying AJ Guy, and it annoyed me slightly.
People do still spell it wrong. They capitalize the J.
Ugh. Ugh. All right, continue.
Oh,
all right.
Really? I've been capitalizing the J.
You
nope.
Jerk.
It is just like that. Aww. Okay. You want to do the rundown?
Yeah, here's what we're doing today. We're going to start with the news. Looks like the E3 blowout's slowing down a little bit.
We still got some tender morsels in here, though.
Okay, that's good. Then we're doing Game of the Year for 2004. Then we got the quiz. Then we're going to do our week in gaming, talk about the game releases, and we'll be done and out of here.
Word.
So we get started.
Okay. News. So 1UP has started this rumor that there is a new Xbox coming in 2010. And they're likening it to like what people are expecting out of like the Wii HD or the iPhone 3GS, or basically be a 360 but a little bit better. Which I find completely ridiculous. I don't see any incentive for Microsoft to do this. I think what will happen is you'll see a new SKU that packages Natal in with the system. Apparently the fans of this fire were aflame when Steve Ballmer, the CEO of Microsoft, was speaking at the Executives Club of Chicago when he said, he was informing attendees that a new Xbox 360 will arrive in 2010, one equipped with a, quote, natural interface and built-in camera. I mean, clearly, he's talking about Natal to these people. It's just they don't freaking watch E3 press conferences. He's explaining it to them, you know?
Right.
As simply as he can. And, you know, people were still freaking out about it. So finally, Aaron Greenberg was speaking to Kotaku and just flat out said, there's no new console.
Okay.
So it's going to be a new SKU with Natal. Everyone calm down. Like, would there be any reason for Microsoft to do that, to make a slightly better 360? Especially if it's to push Natal.
Yeah, what would be the point of a better 360 that would potentially be more expensive?
Yeah, I mean, they're getting to a point now where the 360 hardware is very profitable, easy to manufacture, distribute. They've gotten the new Jasper cores out that we'll talk about in a bit. And yeah, there's like no reason for them to do that.
Right.
All.
We'll see another SKU. And which one will this be now? How many?
I think the sixth.
Okay, nice. Ugh.
Let's see. Peggle has... Their PopCap is calling it that they hacked the App Store. A lot of you may know last weekend, Peggle was on the App Store for $1. And this is taking the app from number 60 out of the top 100 to the number one paid app in the App Store. And the point PopCap is trying to prove is that games should almost be rated more on how much money they make rather than how many downloads, because when you look at the top 10 apps, it's a lot of fart buttons. And the quality stuff gets buried because it's more than $1. So they were just kind of proving their point.
I bought Peggle for $1.
I bought it for $6.
Yeah,
yeah. So this news story is dedicated to Beige. Fatal Frame 4, which is not being released in the U.S. by Nintendo, like ever, is getting a fan translation. If you have the Wii Homebrew channel, which is also your means to play imports, at the end of the summer, it's hopefully be finished. You can download a patch onto your SD card and play the game.
Yeah, too bad these things usually take a while, huh?
Well, they said end of summer is the expected timeline.
Really?
To get it done,
end of summer?
Yeah, they're 45% done already.
Didn't that Mother 3 one take like a year?
Yeah, I was going to say, they say they're going to have it done within a particular time frame, but then, you know.
Well, I think Mother 3
has a lot
more text.
Somebody's girlfriend is going to break up with him, and she's going
right.
to throw
yeah,
his computer in the garbage, and oh, it's going to be fucking terrible.
Yeah.
For example.
Do you guys have familiarity with the game Let's Tap?
Barely. I know it's the Sonic guy.
Yeah. Well, when it came out in Japan, the idea of is you place the Wiimote on a cardboard box and tap the box, and those vibrations cause stuff to happen to the Wiimote and affect the game. So, you know, it comes with the box in Japan. It comes with the box in Europe. In America, not so much. But if you get it at Best Buy, they have the limited edition that comes with a tap pad, which the guys over at Giant Bomb have done a video unboxing and test of. The tap pad is a piece of paper. I don't know what it does, but it is literally a piece of paper. His best bet, he got the game to work the best when he put it on top of like a giant speaker system box or something. It was pretty amusing.
Hmm.
Also, that game looks like shit.
Well, you know, the Sonic guy.
Yes. So, during E3, IGN was reporting that Xbox Originals would be no more, with just one more unannounced release to come. Well, now if you look over at the Xbox Marketplace on the PC, you'll see the Xbox Original games are now listed as part of the Games on Demand service that we all found out about. What people are wondering is, does this mean when they said Xbox Originals is done, the branding's done, but Xbox One's games, in addition to 360 games, will be coming to the Games on Demand channel?
I feel like if they were planning to still release more Xbox Original games, that they would have already handled that piece of damage control in the announcement.
Yeah.
I don't see why they wouldn't have mentioned that.
I feel like they really screwed up Xbox Originals. Like, I mean, part of why I guess they're doing this is because they haven't really been selling all that well. But no one freaking cares about the three Crash Bandicoot games that are out there. Where's, like, the actual good Xbox games that people would want?
Right, not that there's many of them.
Well, I mean,
there's enough.
Even just in terms of practicality, like, one of the things I noticed was pretty asinine. When Halo first came out, when the main menu came up, you had four options. You had campaign, multiplayer, settings, and demos. And there was a fourth little button at the bottom that would take you to a separate part of the disc that had demos for other Xbox games. The Halo Game of the Year edition, which is the copy that I have right over here, doesn't have that. It's just the three options. Campaign, multiplayer, settings, right? The version on Xbox Originals has the menu from the previous version of the game. It has the little demos button and a little warning before you start the game. Don't click the demos button, it'll crash the game. What? Like, you couldn't have just used the other one? It's a little thing, but that was a sign to me that wasn't at all important to them. And they were just kind of throwing it out there for, you know, to provide some sort of lip service for people.
Right.
You know,
did
really
you ever actually...
original Xbox games.
AJ, have you ever even downloaded an Xbox Original?
No, but only because I own all of them, pretty much.
Okay. Well, yeah, I did. I never did. How much were they? Like $10?
They're $15.
$15, yeah. No.
That's not bad for a last-gen game.
I was holding out for Stranger's Wrath. I've been waiting for so long to play that fucking game again. And... They're fucking up.
I bought Stranger's Wrath used somewhere a long time ago. I've been waiting for it to be backwards compatible or something.
Well, never will. They're done with that.
Yeah.
Nah,
whoops.
It's not gonna happen.
Yep.
Dang it.
Which is a shame, because I mean there are plenty of really good. Well, of course I say plenty, but I can't think of any other than Stranger's Wrath.
Well, that's enough to be upset about.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, and that's a game that. Nobody's really ever going to play again because, you know, like especially with the 360 being like somewhat backwards compatible. Original Xbox and are like they're impossible to find. I haven't even seen one in God years at this point. So you know the PS2 has a big enough install base that even without the backwards compatibility, PS2 games would still be around. Original right. Xbox games, they're just collecting dust. Nobody's ever going to play Stranger's Wrath again, because who still has an original Xbox?
I'll play it someday. Someday soon. AJ, you have your Xbox somewhere?
Yeah, it's right over there.
Okay. Man, that is one ugly fucking console.
I'll get over it.
God, it's just gross.
Welcome back to 2001. Okay. If you want an Xbox 360 and you're getting an arcade unit, you should try to get one that's been manufactured in April 2009 or later, because now they have 512 megabytes of onboard memory, as opposed to 256. Nice little boom to throw in there, I guess.
Boost, I guess.
It's not that much memory, still.
For the arcade machine, yeah, it works.
Whatever.
Pre-order Halo 3 ODST and get Sergeant Johnson as an unlockable character for multiplayer.
Guilty as charged.
Yay! Who's Sergeant Josh Johnson?
Oh, you want to feel this one?
Sergeant Johnson is the angry black man who won't die. That's who he is.
Okay.
When you play the original Halo, he's the guy who's like giving that like ridiculous speech to the Marines. I don't care if it's God's own anti-son of a bitch machine. You know that guy?
Oh, he's the commanding officer.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
He's that Got guy.
Oh, he was in charge of the Pillar of Autumn.
No, he wasn't in charge of it.
No, he's not the captain. He's like the stereotypical black sergeant, the guy who was like pulled straight out of the movie.
He's the Samuel
Aliens.
Jackson of the Halo universe.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, pretty much. He's all a caricature, right, and he's funny as hell. And yeah, I totally pre-ordered the game.
Yeah, I will before it comes out too, bro. I mean, you can pre-order like GameStop, Best Buy, Walmart, and Amazon to get the pre-order bonus.
Yep.
Okay, let's see. John Shepard. I didn't write down his position at Microsoft, but it doesn't matter anymore because he's left Microsoft to rejoin EA, where he left in 07 as a CEO. John Shepard, I believe if I remember correctly, is the guy who was a big push behind the new Xbox experience, in addition to some other live services.
And he also was the main voice of E3 this year for them, right?
One of them.
Wasn't he the guy who was like in charge of their conference, I thought?
There were a couple guys out for the conference.
Okay, there was a main guy.
No, I forget who it was.
I'm pretty sure it was him.
Okay.
There we go. This is compelling radio right here.
So, a lot of people have wondered how GameStop would survive in the age of digital distribution. Well, they're working on it. The Fallout 3 DLC, Point Lookout, comes out Tuesday. They're also selling retail cards for it that you can buy in stores. GameStop has broken the street date on those cards, and they work.
Huh.
So that's one way to get people to come to your store. Put out the DLC 5 days early, and people will come buy
it
there.
What DLC is this now?
It's Point Lookout, the new Fallout 3 DLC.
Oh. Which one's that about?
It's the one set in, like, the Swampland area.
Okay.
Kind of almost looks like a survival horror game.
Cool.
And finally, this just came up this morning, and this is hilarious. Bobby Kotick's Activision's Bobby Kotick, oh my god, has threatened to stop supporting Sony consoles within 2010 to 2011 if they do not drop the price. Speaking with the Times, Kotick had this to say.
You could almost hear the dicks waggling.
I haven't even heard this.
I'm getting concerned about Sony. The PlayStation 3 is losing a bit of momentum, and they don't make it easy for me to support them. It's expensive to develop for the console, and the Wii and the Xbox are just selling better. Games generate a better return on invested capital on the Xbox than on the PlayStation. They have to cut the price, because if they don't, the attach rates are likely to slow. If we are being realistic, which you know, I'm sure he is, we might have to stop supporting Sony. When we look at 2010 and 2011, we might want to consider if we support the console, and the PSP, too.
I love the PSP, too, at the end. Also the PSP.
But everything that I just said about the PS3, that also applies to...
friggin' right.
You know, the funny thing about that is that, you know, the way this business works is that, you know, say like a year and a half down the road, if Sony still hasn't dropped the price on the PS3 and the attach rates are still kind of shitty, then yeah, it probably would be in Activision's best interest to spend more money on 360 development than on PS3 development, because they'll just end up making more money that way. But you don't actually say that shit.
Right.
That's one of those things that you just kind of do, and, you know, like when the moment arrives and you're like, hey, we'll make more money on the 360 than we will on the PS3, let's develop for the 360. And then you might end up with, like, you might end up with a 360 game with like a really shitty PS3 port because they didn't give a rat's ass or whatever. But that's the kind of thing that big companies are just supposed to do so that we can like crawl around in the dark and, you know, wring our hands and get all angry at them for being big corporations and trying to make money.
You don't actually come right out and go, yeah, well, we're actually gonna, you know, so fuck these guys because we can't make enough money off of them. Like, you don't do that. You have to at least pretend that you give a shit.
I guess that the public, they're going with the public statement because they're trying to coerce Sony into doing it.
Which is...
I mean, it's very easy for these software companies to say, yeah, lower the console, increase the attach rate so our games sell better. You know, I mean, if Sony lowers the price of a PS3 by $50, that's a huge hit on them. They're losing a lot of money with even a very small price cut. And, you know, when things aren't going great already, it's just hard to do. And, I mean, we're probably are going to see a price cut anyways, and it probably is going to hurt them. I think it's a little, this sort of public display is a little dickish of Activision.
Well, that's nothing new.
Right, like, and besides, what is, like, we're going to stop supporting Sony? All they do is release, you know, ports anyways. It's not like they have any, like, PS3 exclusives in the works.
Right. It's all multiplayer. Well, I just, like, you know, this could very easily be shifted to where you do something like, you know, The Times interviewed AJ Minotti where he had this to say, I'm getting concerned about Activision. They keep releasing more expensive peripherals for games I really don't care that much about. For example, I can play EA Skate without a $120 fucking ridiculous-looking plastic skateboard. By the time 2010 rolls around, if they keep doing this, I won't buy their games anymore.
Yeah. I don't know who's buying Tony Hawk Ride. What's it called? Ride It?
Ride, just Ride.
I think, yeah. Tony Hawk Ride.
I look at that. It doesn't even look like it's that good a game. Then you're going to make me buy a skateboard thing to go on top
of it? Really does remind me a lot of those bad arcade skating games.
Exactly.
Yeah. But then, I don't know, Rock Band 5, still Rock Banding after all these years. Not Rock Band 5, Guitar Hero 5.
You know what I love? Guitar Hero 5 was not playable at the E3 show floor, and the judges were allowed to play it for judging purposes, but they weren't allowed to editorialize about it. I mean, what the fuck is their article going to say? It's Guitar Hero.
Yeah, that's
like,
weird.
We don't know what that's like.
Maybe there's something strange about it. Maybe there's like a fifth track for harmonicas or something.
All I know you can like have four drummers, but don't know. You can have four drummers. I just spoiled it.
You can have four drummers.
If you want to, you can leave your friends behind.
If that... Wow. They're stretching. They're stretching so fucking far that that needs to stop.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I guess that's it for the news.
Yep.
So we can get to 2004 now.
Incidentally, I just realized this is the year I got my computer.
Yeah. Congratulations.
Well, I was very excited to play, like, some of these games on my new PC.
Rock on.
Yeah, it's pretty old now, huh?
Yeah.
All right, so first off, we have Donkey Kong Jungle Beat, which was
You skipped a lot of stuff at the beginning of the alphabet, my friend.
You can get to whatever you want to do at the end.
All right, whatever.
With all your stuff.
Whatever.
I skipped absolutely nothing that is not too important. Trust me. My list is great. I'm perfect at getting that line of just important enough. You know, we can't do every Tom Long John game out there, you know?
What?
Every what?
Every Tom Long John.
You mean Tom, Dick, and Harry?
I liked Tom Long John.
Brother. Long's not even a name.
There's your new intro right there.
I was watching the Muppet Show, and... At one point, Gerwitz said, we can't let every Tom, Dick, and Harry back here. And then three monsters walk by. He's like, oh, hi, Tom, Dick, and Harry.
It's pretty funny. All right, continue your list, Tom right. Long. We yeah. know a Tom Long.
Yeah.
That's weird.
That's probably where that came from. All right. No more complaining from you, George. This is the list, and you'll like it. You'll like it.
He's shaking his fist.
Sir, yes, sir.
All right. There we go. Donkey Kong Jungle Beat, which was a great 2D platformer where you played it with the bongos that came with Donkey Kong bongo game. What was that called?
Donkey Konga.
Donkey Konga, yeah. You play with those. It was kind of interesting. It was actually made by the people who would later make Mario Galaxy.
Yes.
Well, it was a pretty good
very
platformer.
Small team, really cocky dudes. And really? Awesome, awesome work. Jungle Beat was hilarious.
It was great. I mean, it was fun.
I understand, though, that they did the new Play Control Wii version of it, but, like, it doesn't emulate like you're playing it with bongos.
How does it work?
I think you use the analog stick on the nunchuck.
I've still heard decent things about even that version, so I don't know. Next is Doom 3, which for me was horribly overshadowed this year by some other FPS.
Yeah. Not, it was good though. It's just, it was very old school in its design with the monster closets and everything, but you know, impressive tech for the time, very nice shadowing.
Yes. I mean, I played it again a couple of weeks ago, and it's still, I mean, you know, obviously it's, you know, technology has moved forward significantly, but the game, you know, it's not by any means ugly, except for the character models. But, you know, id Software was always more concerned with making the walls bleed than making the characters look at all interesting.
Right.
But this, I mean, this was the year of the three big first-person shooters, two of which we expected and one of which we didn't, and stole a lot of thunder from the other two. This will become clear as the list goes on.
Wait, is Doom 3 one of the big three?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. Next up is Fable, the first Fable.
That game is basically, it was okay at the time, but it's basically been rendered unplayable by Fable 2 now.
Yeah, pretty much.
You want it to play like Fable 2, and it doesn't.
I just remember, and like, a lot of people blame Peter Molyneux, but I always kind of blame all the previews for the time that were just sort of like, they were just ridiculous about what the game was going to be like. I had very...
Well, granted, that's what Peter Molyneux tells them.
Yeah, I know, but maybe you shouldn't take a developer just straight up on their word.
Well, I think in the years, people have learned to translate what Peter's saying into reality.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, my original thoughts for this game was, oh, it's Grand Theft Auto, but it's fantasy.
Yeah.
And it's not an open-world game, like, at
all. Well, it was supposed to be, and that got cut, and then you were supposed to have all this deep character interaction, and a lot of that got cut. And, you know.
Right. I mean, when I just...
You were supposed to be able to see a tree growing over its entire lifespan.
Oh, that's right. Was a big deal. That was a really big deal.
Can you believe we actually got excited about that shit?
Yeah, now we don't, like, because of Fable, I've learned to not even care about shit like that anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, oh, we can make a tree go. Okay, that's fucking nice. Good for you. Clap, clap, clap.
Those were innocent times.
Right. We were easily impressed. All right, next is Gran Turismo 4, which is a big deal for people who play Gran Turismo. Anyone here play those?
Next,
okay. What, you have something you want to say, George? Huh?
I just remember Gran Turismo 4 being the only PS2 game that I owned that played in 1080i and looked good.
Oh, did I? I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was just like, it was a really obscure hardware feature of the PS2 that it supported 1080i output if you were fucking insane enough to try and make it work. And I think Polyphony Digital has established they are batshit insane. In a good way, but they're crazy.
Yeah.
Also, okay. I must say, before you continue, I have to at least interject one of the big three first-person shooters, Far Cry, came out this year also.
Oh, you missed that?
And I guess Far Cry
was that was the game that came out of nowhere. Because everybody was...
I was wondering what you were talking about.
I thought you were talking about something else, actually.
No. I wasn't talking about Halo 2, because as much of a Bungie fan as I am, that game was terrible.
I wasn't talking about that.
But, you know, it was Doom 3 and Half-Life 2 came out within like a couple of weeks of each other, and everybody was making a big deal out of those two games and the competition between the two of them. They're like, oh my god, is it going to be Doom or is it going to be Half-Life? Id and Valve are like, they're going head to head. This is going to be fucking crazy. It's going to be such a big deal. 2 weeks before either of them came out, Far Cry came out and stole all of their thunder. I remember when Far Cry came out and all the gaming websites were like, holy shit, what the hell is this? And it was, you know, I mean, the game definitely, like, the last third of the game was pretty bad.
See,
but
the thing is, my problem with Far Cry is it always seemed like it was encouraging me to take this quasi-stealthy approach to everything, but the AI could, like, see through the brush and, like, a mile away. I died instantly in that game because I tried the demo first, you know, and I got my new computer. And I couldn't get anywhere in it, so I never bought the game, because I couldn't even beat the demo. So, I don't know.
I don't know if I'm going to let you get away with the, it stole Half-Life 2's thunder.
It did. I mean, listen, it's not better than Half-Life 2, but I know
I'm not saying that either.
I know plenty of people who stopped giving a shit about Half-Life 2 after they played Far Cry. And then, of course, Half-Life 2 came out, and I made them play it, and they were like, oh, okay, this is better than Far Cry. But
okay.
Like, all the same, I'm not talking about the quality of the game.
Right.
You know,
I know you're
not. Far Cry 2 was very good, but it came out at just the right moment, and it made just the right promises that there were plenty of people who stopped caring about both Doom 3 and Half-Life 2 because they wanted to play Far Cry instead.
I guess at this point, my gaming microcosm was pretty much just me and my two brothers.
We didn't really have many fellow cohorts.
Right, and then, you know, in Poland, Ohio, gaming isn't huge. So for us, we just kind of didn't. I still never actually played Far Cry, and AJ played the demo. So for us, it was all Half-Life 2 all the time. All
right, well, I mean, this was...
The hype machine was strong at the Minotti household.
Yeah, I mean, this was around the time that I had moved into the city. So it was, you know, I was definitely surrounded by a much larger community of gamers than I had been before. And I was really excited about Half-Life 2, and I had friends who were really excited about Doom 3, and we were going back and forth, and it was this friendly rivalry that we had. And then Far Cry just came in and, like, blindsided everybody, and, like, half the people were just like, oh, man, Far Cry is better than both of them. And I was like, wow, that's pretty impressive for a German company to come right out of the gate and go toe-to-toe with id and Valve. That was a pretty big deal. I was certainly impressed by Crytek at least having the balls to do that.
Right. All right. Next up is Grand Theft Auto San Andreas.
Fuck GTA on a deep ideological level.
I know we've all been sort of anti-Rockstar lately.
It's just, yeah.
Lately,
the reason I could not get into
forever.
This game. The reason I cannot get into this game is because I booted up, and the story cataclysm is your mother has been murdered, and you must avenge her. But then I jump in a car and run over 20 people. So I'm like, well, you know what? I don't give a fuck about your mom, so sorry.
Okay, but let me be...
I also didn't give a shit about working out at a gym and eating burgers to make myself fat.
So it has some RPG elements which were kind of interesting, I thought. Okay, AJ shakes his head, no. But it also had one the biggest world of any of the Grand Theft Autos.
Yeah, that's impressive, but the thing is I never even got far enough into it to unlock any of
that. It was
a
huge game. It's interesting how there are, you know, a lot of features in this that were taken out of the series in GTA 4.
That game is the quintessential quantity over quality.
Yep.
All right. We'll move on since you two are such big fans. Mm-hmm. Game of the year? No, I don't think so.
No.
Okay. All right, how about this one? Half-Life 2.
Half-Life 2, I haven't browsed through the rest of the list, so I'm not sure yet, but that's my front runner right now.
Oh, man. I'll tell you, when I first booted up Half-Life 2, actually, you know what? When I said before how I was kind of excited for it, that may have been an exaggeration. When I think about it, I think I was kind of...
I was.
I knew you were, but I was just sort of there, but then I played it, and it was just... That whole opening thing was just, I don't know, the things it was doing at the time, just like... The way characters' faces were animating well.
Well, that was like, that was like one of the first games to have such accurate, like, emotional context to the facial animation.
Right, exactly. It wasn't just like the mouth animation of open and close that, like, you know, you were used to in, say, Half-Life 1.
Right.
The way you just picked up objects and were throwing them. And then, of course, the gravity gun much later.
Well, this game redefined physics in a first-person shooter.
Right.
I mean, it was always... You get, like, to stuff like Max Payne, where you had a lot of stuff flying around, but it was just eye candy. It wasn't very important to anything. But this, you know, completely changed all that.
Mm-hmm. Plus, just the whole, and, you know, Half-Life 1 did it too, but the whole, you know, we're never taking you out of that first-person perspective. We're going to tell the whole story in there. And, you know, other games do it, but I don't think a game has done it better than Half-Life 2.
Nope.
Yeah.
Paced perfectly, I think. I'm just...
Very well-paced game.
Right.
Really digging that.
Yeah, well, Valve really understands that concept of... You know, you do an intense firefight, and then you get, like, a cooldown. You have some time to explore, walk around, do some, like, light platforming and puzzle solving before you get into your next fight and this is to prevent what they call battle fatigue. It's a really good design philosophy. I like it a lot.
Right. But it's pretty much one of my all-time favorites. I've played through it quite a few times.
And the final level is great. Some people don't like it.
What?
I say you're wrong.
No. I'm sorry. That final level... Where you get the super fucking gravity gun,
and
you're just a
tiny god walking around.
Right.
People are like, oh, it's overpowerful, it made the end boring. It made the end awesome. You played this game for 12 hours, and your reward is you get to be a badass at the end and just destroy everything.
No, there's nothing better than at that end of the game, where you're walking around with the super gravity gun, Dr. Breen's just like on the computer monitors.
Like mocking you?
He's not mocking you, he's begging you.
to stop.
It's so
he's
good.
Pleading with you.
It's so good.
He's like trying to belittle you.
Yeah. Then there's that point where he's talking to one of the combine advisors on a screen, and he's begging the combine to take him away from Earth, like to get him away from you.
I know.
And he turns
get me
around,
off this planet.
Right. And then you come up an elevator behind him, and he turns around. And this cool, collected, composed scientist in a tweed suit goes, "Oh shit!"
And
oh my
runs.
God!
And I runs
mean, just,
from you,
like just to see his to see that character just break and crumble. Beautiful.
Oh man,
just incredible.
Yeah, it's good. We could talk about that forever. But next is Halo 2. I just picked up from you, George. You don't seem to think much of this
Halo
game.
Well, okay, it was kind of an exaggeration for me to say that game was terrible. It's not terrible. It has a terrible ending.
Yep.
And the plot exposition is, let's call it unfortunate. not necessarily because it's bad, but because so much of the exposition in Halo 2, one, assumes that you know everything about the story from the first game, which, I mean, I did, but I'm kind of an outlier. And two, that you have a really good ability to suspend disbelief. Like, I remember has the statute of limitations passed on talking about Halo 2?
Yeah,
story?
You're fine.
Okay.
Talk about
when,
Halo 2.
Like, when you first, I don't even need to talk about the ending, because that was just a cliffhanger. That was just an abortion of an ending. You can tell they didn't have time to finish it. I knew that before they even said that, and they've stated it publicly since then. Yeah, we didn't have time to finish, sorry. But the moment when you first meet the Gravemind, when you hear the dialogue, and you see the context of the scene, and you hear, like, you know, just the content of what the characters are saying. It's kind of cool, actually. It's this, like, this viral infection has, you know, formed, like, some weird composite body, and it has its own intelligence now, and it's bargaining with you. That's kind of cool. The problem is to see the model, which looks like fucking Audrey from Little Shop of Horrors. And
which I played,
you can tell, that the game is going, I know it looks weird, just trust me. And the thing is that, like, I trusted them because I'm a Bungie fan. And I was like, okay, I'll take your word for it. I'll roll with it. That's fine. My friend was sitting in the room next to me and he just fucking died. He was on the floor laughing his ass off. And I'm sitting there, like, and I'm trying to hear what the dialogue is. And I'm, like, restarting the cutscene, like, three times. And my friend is just laughing his ass off. He's like,
ah! He's just rolling around going, feed me!
Where's Rick Moranis? I'm just like, oh, damn it. So yeah, I mean, and a lot of the exposition in the game is like that. It's one of those things where if you're not already familiar with the story, anything that they add on top of it is just going to sound silly.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, my thing with the game is,
that was Halo 2's biggest problem. It was just really hard to take seriously.
I didn't end up beating this game till the day before Halo 3 came out. Cause it's one of those deals where, like, I was playing it, and I wasn't quite with the clip that everybody else was at the time it came out. And then all the reports started coming out, like, we don't want to spoil it, but we're just telling you, the ending sucks. And I'm like, yeah. And it kinda killed my enthusiasm for the game until I just kinda stopped. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, as Halo 3's coming out, I'm like, okay, you know what, I need to beat this. I managed to avoid spoilers about the ending the entire time. Start the game, I was on an Arbiter mission.
You managed to get that far without having the ending spoiled for you. That's pretty impressive.
I was very proud of myself. But, like, I when I picked it up, I didn't even remember where I left off. I was like, okay, I'm the Arbiter. Okay, here's Miranda Keys and Sergeant Johnson. Okay, I'm gonna fight this brute. Okay, good, that's done. So I should get a Master Chief level now. Good. And it's just like, sir, I'm here to finish the fight and end. And I was just like, like, you know, I mean, I guess I should have seen it coming. Like you said, I was just like, where's the rest of the game? This can't be it. Thank God, like, the new one comes out tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly.
But I was just like,
the
it
perfect
was...
time to play it. Because, like, for me, like, that happened to me the day after the game came out. And I'm staring at my TV in complete silence for about 10 minutes. Just the credits rolled all the way through. They finished, it kicked back to the main menu, and I'm still just staring at my TV.
I just couldn't believe,
like 10, 15 minutes later, a voice cried out in the darkness, "What the fuck?"
I just couldn't believe, like, it wouldn't even end at least on a Master Chief something where you play him.
Nope.
Just throw in some kind of filler thing. I don't know.
The game
Let's
ended
move
with
on.
A...
Well...
It ended with a boss fight.
I do want to say that I think this was a landmark game for Xbox Live, though.
Yeah, the multiplayer, that's true. We should talk about that.
Well, that's enough to say about it, but...
It invented the party system.
Yes.
Right.
I was just going to say that. Forgetting Xbox Live, Halo 2 invented the party system, and that alone validates its existence.
Right. Okay, so moving on. Mario Golf Advance Tour.
The best Game Boy Advance game ever made.
Okay. But it was basically a golf game with a lot of RPG elements, which was kind of fantastic. It was a lot of fun to play.
Yeah, because once you won the tournament... Mario appeared and challenged you to a golf tournament in the Mushroom Kingdom.
That's what's weird about it. For a bit, it's not even like anything like a Mario game at all, because you just play this character, and Mario doesn't really show up. He's like kind of mentioned, it's sort of like, he's like some sort of like...
Golf legend?
Yeah, it's like weird, but it was a fun game.
Oh, it's phenomenal.
All right.
Before you move on, if I may interject one more.
You get one more.
Ugh.
Oh, that's right, you don't like Katamari.
I do not like Katamari Damacy.
Oh,
he
my
doesn't.
God,
he doesn't
it's because you hate puppies and kittens and all that is good in this world.
No,
I don't.
I
will never
buy
you a unicorn.
I don't like games with frustrating controls and
frustrating?
Games that tried...
What planet are you from, dude?
I couldn't fucking beat a level in that game, and I was doing everything right, because I couldn't...
Well,
it wouldn't fucking work for me.
You weren't. Oh, ugh. Sick burn! No, it's... Okay, did you ever have a radio-controlled car when you were... kid?
Yes, and I was very good at controlling them.
Okay.
The ones with the two sticks?
Did you ever have one of the twin turbo ones? Right?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Katamari is the same thing.
I know, but it just doesn't... I couldn't do it.
AJ, I don't think it doesn't work. People have played this game.
Yeah, I know.
It obviously works. I don't know, were you like holding the controller sideways, or did you have it...
I think I had it pointing the right way.
Were you trying to play it on a 3DO, like, there's some, like...
Oh, that was
funny
my
story.
Problem.
We have two 3DOs.
Anyway.
I don't think I can podcast with you guys anymore.
One broke, but then I fixed it. After we got a new one.
Wait.
Anyway.
No CDI,
though.
You
fixed a broken 3DO.
The disk drive got jammed.
Okay, so it broke, and then you fixed it. Like, you made it not broken anymore.
That's right. With a butter knife.
You really are from another planet.
Oh, man. 3DO had the best ports of Mad Dog and Kreese. I don't want
to
hear it.
That's coming
okay.
to the Wii. Do you see
okay.
this?
Oh, yeah.
You can
all three
have
Mad Dog
Mad
and Kreese are four player. Anyway, if I could go back to my Katamari rant. The thing is, too,
oh, my God.
They freaking run that franchise into the ground.
Into the ground.
Well, they have, yes, but in 2004 they didn't.
2004 is very fresh.
And I know everyone thinks the King of All Cosmos is hilarious, but it's just, to me, it's artificial. It's not funny. English is not funny when it's intentional.
Okay. We'll move. Last word, George. Just
English
tell him to suck
is
it.
Funny.
Tell him to suck it down. Daikatana style.
Daikatana style. Suck okay. it down.
I don't know you how to say it.
Don't
like that,
suck it.
All right. Metal Gear Solid 3, Snake Eater, came out this year.
Again, I've taken my lumps in this, but this was a game that I tried to play. I didn't like it. I got subsistence, still didn't like it. Then I finally hunkered down to play it the night before Metal Gear Solid 4 came out. Got past the part I didn't like, and that was the exact point where the game got good. And I beat it that night in one sitting.
See, I still don't understand this whole part you didn't like nonsense.
Just that the whole area, that whatever that place was where you went to find the old guy and then Ava showed up, it's just, I don't know,
yeah,
about it. I just didn't like.
Oh, so you don't remember that guy's name? Anyways.
No, the beginning stretch of the game, like maybe the first hour, is pretty tedious. And you have to get over that hurdle before you can pick up enough momentum to get through the rest of the game.
Exactly.
And Metal Gear, MGS3... is well documented as being the only Metal Gear Solid game that I actually like, or rather, that I like on an honest level. I find MGS2 impressive as a practical joke. And I think Metal Gear Solid 4 fascinating as a deliberate attempt to shoot a franchise in the head.
And it didn't work.
But, yeah, that's the sad thing. He tried so hard. He spent millions of dollars trying to kill the fucking franchise just so he could go and do something else. And it had completely the opposite effect of what
Man, screw you. I still love Metal Gear Solid 4. But we'll save this argument for some other day.
Okay. But yeah, Snake Eater is great. I think we can agree that Snake Eater is awesome.
Snake Eater is amazing.
I'm completely in favor of its awesomeness.
Well, you know what makes it so good? The plot is relatively straightforward, especially when compared to other Metal Gear games.
Right, there's still some silliness in it. There's still a guy who can shoot lightning out of his hands.
Yeah, but you know what? Right. It's a pretty simple story about a spy doing some spy shit with a love interest being cool.
Right, and it's probably the only Metal Gear game where... Okay, I shouldn't say the only one, but there's a lot of emotional investment in it.
Yes.
It's all very genuine.
Well, I mean, I certainly felt more invested in the character. I mean, one, because you could tell that they tried a little bit harder with the script and with those voice actors. Definitely put a lot more work into the characterization. But it also helps to know a lot of the story that happens afterwards. Because everything that happens to you in that game kind of takes on this secondary meaning because you know that the guy you're playing is eventually going to become Big Boss.
Right.
And so you know that, like, he's eventually going to have this legacy. And that knowledge is kind of always hanging over your head the entire time you're playing the game. So you're aware of the fact that everything that you're doing in this game is going to have, like, far-reaching effects down the road. And all of these things are, like, you know, they're forming his character and they're forming his reputation as the ultimate soldier, like, you know.
Right, it would be like if someone made a Phoenix Wright-style game starring young Abraham Lincoln during his, attorney days, knowing that he would someday become, you know, the 16th president of the United States.
That's kind of the atmosphere that they created. It was kind of cool that they presented everything as, like, setting a precedent for the other games. Like, there was an Easter egg that, like, the first time you find a cardboard box in MGS3, if you get into the cardboard box and you call Sigint, they have this ridiculous, fourth wall shattering, completely surreal conversation about why Snake is in the box.
I remember that.
He's like, Snake, I did that. Snake, where are you right now? I'm in a box. A cardboard box? Yeah. Why? I don't know. I saw this box, and I just knew that I had to be inside the box.
He goes,
I felt like it was my
destiny,
and he goes on. He has this, like, long-ass monologue about how it's his destiny to be in this cardboard box. And Sigint just bugs the fuck out on him. He's like, what the fuck is wrong with you? You crazy, man? Click. End conversation. Man. You're like, what just happened?
George, I'm interested to know, did you play this pre-Subsistence?
I didn't play pre-Subsistence.
So
that was a foundation of a lot of my frustration, because when you can't control the camera and you don't have the radar anymore, it doesn't work. It just doesn't.
Well, it might work.
The PS2 games of this type were typically pretty blurry. It was dark, and the enemies were wearing pretty effective camouflage. I can't tell how many times I just walked into people. And this game in particular, if you walked into someone and they alerted, you were screwed.
Right. I can't imagine playing through this game without the third-person camera.
Yeah.
Personally. I mean, did you have any problems with it, George?
I played it both ways. It's much more user-friendly with the third-person camera. With the overhead camera, it's still playable, but you know that you do have, like, the occasional boneheaded moment where you're just like, oh shit, what's that bunk? Oh, fuck, you know.
Right.
At least with the third person camera, you can kind of get your bearings a little bit more easily. But that didn't stop the game from being one of my favorites of all time.
Yep. All right. Cool. Next up is Metroid Prime 2 Echoes.
I never did finish this.
Yeah, I never did either.
You never finished the first one.
Okay, well, right. But it's sort of weird.
You finished the first one. It's amazing.
All right, yeah. I love Metroid Prime. I'm going to finish it.
I do plan to play through the whole trilogy once the trilogy thing comes out in August.
Metroid Prime 2 is always going to have a hard time living up to Metroid Prime 1. And I remember there was a lot of the big feature they were kind of touting for it was the multiplayer mode, which no one ended up giving a shit about. But it was still Metroid Prime, and it was still, you know, good and fun. Next up, Myst 4.
Yay!
Which was a very pretty game, I remember.
It was gorgeous.
Like, I don't play these Myst games, I just look at you play them, but it looked very beautiful.
What this game did that was really cool is that the cursor you had was an actual 3D model of a hand, and you could interact with just about anything, and it would, at the very least, make the appropriate sound.
So you could tap the wood, and it would make the wood sound?
Exactly. Okay. Which added a surprising amount of depth to the game, as far as, like, the game world. This game just was really, really good. I liked it a lot.
Ninja Gaiden, the first remake.
Ninja Gaiden on the Xbox.
I cannot get into this game.
Oh, this game is pretty sweet.
I can't. Okay. I just can't get into it.
No. This is a pretty sweet action game.
See, my thing is, I think, like, the reason why I like something like God of War over this is I don't know if it's just I don't have the time or I just don't care enough or what. I have no interest in sitting down and learning 50 different combos for very specific actions I have to do against specific – I don't care. I just want to be able to hit the X button and look cool.
I beat Ninja Gaiden without memorizing a single combo.
I have to say, I think you're just – what you're complaining, Jay, is that's too hard.
Probably.
Yeah. Because
Ninja Gaiden, it doesn't really require memorizing any combos. It just requires requires you to have precise timing. Is the only thing that
right.
It is. It's not even really about the reflexes. It's about, like, the game has a definite rhythm that you have to get into, and it's very unforgiving in that sense, where if you break that rhythm that the gameplay establishes, you just get smacked.
I also didn't like this game because it has just about the most generic art you can find in a game of this type.
It is.
The demon drawings are, like, out of a middle schooler's notebook.
Dude, it's Team Ninja.
Yeah.
Don't expect too much out of them in the imagery department.
Right, yeah.
It was either that or breasts. So, you know, figure let them take a break from the breasts for a game or two, and then go back to more dead or alive games that nobody plays but everybody likes to look at on forums. Metal Gear Solid Twin Snakes, by the way. I saw that under...
it's just a remake.
But a good one.
It was a good one.
Probably one of the only games that Silicon Knights has worked on that didn't fill me with frustration.
Well, the what bothered me about that, though, is they re-recorded all the voices, and they weren't as good the second time around.
Mm. Yeah, they were getting rid of accents everywhere.
Yeah, I still never figured that out, and they were still gone in 4, which kind of bothered me.
Yeah, I never understood why Mei Ling was no longer Chinese and why Naomi was no longer English. Always bothered me. Okay, next up is, Paper Mario the Thousand Year Door. I love this game.
I've never played a lot of it, actually.
This one is so good.
This one is, I even like this one a lot more than the first one for just whatever reason, but, I don't know, just the whole presentation, like, I love when you go in the battles, you're, like, on a stage, and you have all those...
Right, I did play this one, right. I was thinking the first one.
Right.
You had the audience.
And you had to, like, actually kind of, like, perform for them. And you got, like, bonuses for, like, kind of adding little flair to your style and just all the button prep time things and the hilarious script.
What has made Paper Mario...
It's funny.
Oh, it's so funny.
What's made the Paper Mario game so good is that they're willing to just say, this is a video game. You know, this doesn't need to make sense. You're on a stage because it's funny. You know?
Right.
Don't worry about it.
Well, it makes sense in context because the whole thing is kind of presented like a story.
It's a pop-up book.
Right, a pop-up book, or, you know, like a little play or something, you know, and they're very conscious of that, so that's why they do those things. And, you know, it's very simple. I think you'll only ever equip, like, a badge and the weapon. So you don't have to worry too much about shit like that. You know, it's pretty linear for the most part. You're constantly going back to the one town, but in, like, that, like, one, like, dungeon where the thousand-year door is and stuff like that. But it was just a lot of fun to play. It was hilarious. And, very satisfying RPG experience. Probably my favorite Mario RPG that's not Mario RPG.
Alright.
That's a very specific and narrow list.
Basically meaning I like it better than the first Paper Mario and the first two Mario & Luigi's.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Phoenix Wright Trials and Tribulation, which is...
Why'd you put this one down, not the first one?
I did put down the first one.
We did the first one?
Yes, we did.
Okay.
This is the third Phoenix Wright game, which is kind of the end of Phoenix Wright's story, because the next one would follow Apollo Justice. It had some of my favorite missions in the game. It had a lot of...
I haven't played it yet, so don't say anything.
Had a lot of good drama. I loved it. We'll move on. Pikmin 2, which I haven't played yet. I'm waiting for that new Play Control version to come out.
They're doing a new Play Control version in the second one, too?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's why I haven't gotten the first one, because I know this one's supposed to be a lot better.
Right.
It has co-op.
Yeah, it has co-op. No, in a weird sort of way, I actually like the first one better. And not only that, I actually like the GameCube version better. So, yeah, obviously I'm a douchebag.
obviously.
But
obviously we hate you.
Yeah. I rented the new Play Control version of Pikmin. And, you know, I mean, the game's virtually identical in its structure. The only thing that's different is the controls. But, you know, when I was playing the game with the controls, it felt really schizophrenic, because in one sense, it felt more appropriate to use the pointer to direct the Pikmin around. But on the other hand, there were a lot of things for which it just didn't work. Like, when you... On the GameCube version, you would use the C stick to move that little blob of Pikmin around your body to point them in the right direction. And in the Wii version, you have to, like, hold down a button and, like, aim the Wiimote in a particular direction. And if you want to move them to a different spot, you got to, like, swing it around. It gets really awkward. And... Hmm. After about 10 minutes of that, I decided it wasn't worth it for me to relearn the controls from scratch, and I just went back and played it on the GameCube.
Fair enough. Next up is Ratchet & Clank Up Your Arsenal. This was the third Ratchet & Clank game. It was very Ratchet & Clanky, and everyone loved it. The end?
The end.
Next up was Sly 2, Band of Thieves. This is the second Sly Cooper game.
Oh, you got Red Dead Revolver in there also. Which I
see,
just
I didn't,
have to bring
I didn't
up
play
because
Red
I
Dead
love
Revolver.
Westerns. Red Dead Revolver wasn't that great, but just simply.
See, that's what I thought. That's what I was about to say. I thought everyone said it wasn't all that good.
No,
I thought
it wasn't
a game that
it wasn't all that good. But you know, there are so few video game westerns that I was just starved for something that even made an attempt.
Right, and that's the impression I got. Everyone was like really pulling for this game. Everyone tried to like it more than it maybe deserved because they just wanted it to be good.
Yeah. Well, because, you know, we hadn't had a good video game western since fucking Outlaws. Like, come on.
Mm-hmm. Alright then, but next is Spider-Man 2, which was actually a lot of fun, mostly just for the parts where you're just swinging around the city.
Yeah.
Right, I mean, the missions parts
are
pretty
forgettable. And they're like, dude, we have spontaneous missions. And I just want to finally say, you know what, kid? Fuck your balloon.
Yeah, honestly.
Who cares?
It was always
I have more important shit to do than get your balloon.
It was always get my balloon or take me to the hospital or stuff like that. But, I mean, just swinging around and especially when you, like, run up a building, that was always fun.
Well, and it was neat because it had actual webline physics where you weren't just, like, in the first game. You could jump off, you know, the Empire State Building and continue swinging off of something. Whereas this one, like, you know, you actually had to have attach points.
Right. And, of course, everyone immediately went to the Empire State Building and jumped off it for fun. Why not? Chronicles of Riddick, Escape from Butcher Bay.
See, I thought this is what you're talking about for the game that came out of nowhere that stole thunder.
Well,
that
game did come out of nowhere, but it didn't really steal anybody's thunder, which was unfortunate. And that's because it was on the Xbox.
Yeah.
And that kind of killed it. Because, I mean, I think... I should have specified. I was talking about PC shooters.
Nice.
You know, and it was all like Doom 3, Half-Life 2, Doom 3, Half-Life 2, Doom 3, Half-Life 2, and Far Cry just, you know, it was on the same platform, and Far Cry showed up offering a lot of the same things that both of those games were promising, and a bunch more, and that was where the surprise came from.
I was
Escape
surprised.
From Butcher Bay is just good.
Yeah,
right.
It's just a great game.
And I was surprised to see that it came out, like, the same year as, like, something like Half-Life 2. Because it seems like, on that level, presentation-wise, and it's hard to believe that they kind of worked on this game without having that Half-Life 2 there as a precedent that's something they can look at. Because, I mean, it was very impressive the way... It's still one of the few first-person shooters that can really do stealth very well.
And melee combat.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And it had a very presentable story. It was good-looking at the time. I don't know how well that holds up today.
Well, but the remake, the
Assault on Dark Athena.
Assault on Dark Athena, thank you. I mean, it looks good. I mean, it still has that kind of, like...
First-gen Vaseline look.
It's still normal mapped.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I am always, like, no matter how much everyone seems to love it, I'm always going to resist normal mapping on some, like, deep gut level. Because I like it in theory. And if it were replaced with something like displacement mapping or something that was kind of done a little differently, technologically, I'd be all about it. But it's like I would rather have a less detailed model than a model that looks like it's been smeared in Vaseline. It's just like...
Listen how technical he is. He's learning things.
That, you know. Hmm?
I said, listen how technical you are. You're learning things at school.
Hey, you know, yeah. They're teaching me stuff here.
Education.
next up is Thief Deadly Shadows, which I guess is Thief 4, right?
I think so.
Yeah. It's the last Thief game they made. No, wait. Maybe this is Thief 3, because the next one's called Thief 4, isn't it? This is Thief 3. This is the third Thief game they made. Okay, alright. I didn't play much of it myself.
No, I don't think I did either, actually.
George, you're our only hope.
Mm-mm. I played the first one. I played the first one, but...
No, I played the first one, too.
Yeah, but by the time this one came out, I was off the boat.
Okay. Well, last on my list is World of Warcraft, which was a pretty big flipping
deal.
Still
going pretty strong.
Yeah, I'll say. Yeah, it's hard to believe this game's almost 5 years old, huh? Oh, quit your grumbling, you. Quiet, you. I played a lot of it. You know, it's weird. I say it before, I'll say it again. I love being a turtle. No, It's funny because I play this game almost more than any other game ever, but I'm still like I've never ever been the max level. I've never raided a dungeon or anything like that, you know?
Yeah.
Even though I played the game a lot, I've never gotten to end game content ever. So, but it's fun. Every other MMO wants to be it now, despite its similarities of games that came before it. Pretty big deal. All right, George, is there anything else big you wanted to bring up?
Well, nothing big, but two that I wanted to point out just for their kind of, like, grassroots significance, and I know my indie friends will have my head on a pike if I don't at least mention them. One of them is Cave Story, which came out in December 2004. I think it was late 2004. And this is, it's a side-scrolling Metroidvania game made entirely by one dude, translated into English by two other dudes. And it's coming to WiiWare soon, which makes me very happy because I want to get as many people as possible playing
this
game.
Yeah, that's cool, because I never played it. I'll get it on WiiWare, though.
Yeah, well then, when it comes out on WiiWare, you're definitely going to have to play it. This game has so much personality, and it's so, I mean, it's simply the fact that it was all made by one guy. It's so pure. Everything in the game fits because, you know, it's all one guy's vision. Like, he thought up everything. So everything's totally coherent. And, it knowing that the game was made by one person, like, really changes the experience, because then playing it isn't just like, oh, you know, I'm exploring the underground labyrinths of this floating island. It's that you're like romping through some other guy's imagination. And it's a different feeling, because you, like, while you're playing the game, you feel like you're getting to know the guy who made it. And that's, you know, like, regardless of the quality of the game, I think that fact alone makes it worth playing.
Cool.
And the other one is Krieger, which is spelled funny. K-K-R-I-E-G-E-R. All
what's
lowercase with a period in front of it. This was one of the groups in the German demo scene, these guys Farbrausch. They decided that they wanted to have a piece of the Doom 3 pie. They wanted to steal a little bit of id's thunder. So they made a functional, playable, first-person shooter. I think it's like 1.5 levels. It's almost like a demo, really, with this just this beautiful lighting, all of it dynamic lighting and just like very fancy and like normal mapping and these like really high res textures and all this like beautiful stuff. And like you could look at a screenshot from this game and think that it was a screenshot from Doom 3, but this game was 96 kilobytes. And I remember when that launched, a lot of the, again, like a lot of the guys in the indie scene and a lot of guys in the demo scene just went ballistic. Because, I mean, you can download this game. I mean, it's still on the internet. You can get it, you can play it, and it's a 96K download. It's tiny. And yet you play it, and it's a first-person shooter. It's a beautiful first-person shooter. It's all dynamically lit and everything. And that was the first time that the demo scene kind of like crossed over with video games. And, you know, there were a number of people who took notice of it and went, oh man, this is the future of video games. And then people realized how hard it was and then they gave up because they're lazy.
There you go. That's a problem. All right, cool. Why don't we go to Sword Guys
games,
real quick. All right. First up, he has a game called Breakdown.
That was an Xbox game. That was that first-person adventure.
Yeah, it was a Japanese first-person shooter. It says one of the few that are worth giving a shit about. And he said it was pretty cool. And I looked at it a little bit. It's kind of hard to get a feeling for from a couple of YouTube videos, but there it was. Also, it has some hand-to-hand combat, which he liked. Cave Story, he brought up, which you talked about, okay, so we're good. Cool with that. Gradius 5, which... is the last real entry in the series, he says. It was developed by Treasure.
Yes,
you know,
it was.
War Vong shooter by Treasure. So, what more can you ask for, right? Michigan, Report from Hell. Apparently this is a Suda 51 first-person survival horror game that I had not played about before. It looks like you play as a reporter. You know, it's got the Resident Evil quality voice acting, he says. He said it never came out in the States. That would explain why I never heard about it, but it came out in Europe. But apparently the Japanese version is entirely in English, so, strange. Phantom Dust. This was called a pseudo card game.
Oh, yeah.
For the original Xbox.
That game was bizarre. It was cool, but it was bizarre.
Right, yeah, I didn't know much about the series, but I looked at it, it looked pretty cool. Apparently, it was made by some of the guys who, like, made Panzer Dragoon on Jack Grind Radio. It looked pretty sweet. Mm. You keep scrolling past the names, so I can't read them during the pod. Thank you. Shin Megami Tensei Digital Devil Saga.
Holy wall of text.
Yeah.
See, now I feel like he's writing these because he knows I'm going to put him in the blog.
Right. Well, you can. Last one got a decent amount of hits, so go for it.
All
right. But he says it was like a bit more of a dumbed-down Shin Megami Tensei experience, but he still seems to be a fan of it. His other games, he mentioned Alien Hominid, Boktai 2.
Yes.
Burnout 3, Call of Duty, and United Offensive.
Wait, Call of Duty came out this year?
This is one of like the... We did Call of Duty last year, or the year before. Calm down.
This
is like one of the console offshoots or something, or an expansion. Dragon Quest VIII, Evil Genius, Far Cry, Fire Emblem, The Sacred Stones. I do like that Fire Emblem. Far Cry again, for good measure, why not? Full Spectrum Warrior, GTA San Andreas, Half-Life 2, Halo 2, Jack 3.
No, you put down Ratchet, you put down Sly, you put down Jack 3. That's my favorite.
Oh, too bad. Katamari Damacy. Damn, Zelda Minish Cap, Damacy. And Four Sword. Shut up. I don't know anything about Katamari. What is it?
Damacy?
I like Damacy better.
Okay.
Lumines.
Oh, that's a great
Lumines
game.
Lumines was just the most bizarrely overrated puzzle game I've ever seen. I have no idea what the appeal is.
I like it.
I like it.
I don't
actually.
Get it.
I may actually have gotten more absorbed in Lumines than I ever got in Tetris. And I don't know.
This is the year the PSP came out, isn't it?
Yeah.
The PSP,
PSP is not
old.
The game of the year.
PSP is this old. That's kind of weird. Mario Power Tennis. Man, PSP was way too ambitious for its time.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, those games look pretty good. I don't know if games needed to look that good back then.
Right.
Metal Gear Acid, Metal Gear Solid 3, Metroid Prime 2, Metroid Zero Mission.
Oh, that was great.
Ninja Gaiden, Onimusha 3, Painkiller, Paper Mario, A Thousand Year Door, Phantom Brave, Phoenix Wright, Trials and Tribulations, Ratchet and Clank Up Your Arsenal, Silent Hill 4, Sly 2, Taiko Drum Master, Beautiful Joe 2, and WarioWare Twisted. And he also states that World of Warcraft is the single most boring thing ever created by humanity, including the collected works of Godfrey Reggio. So.
Wow. Okay.
Sword guy, Wicked Burn.
Sword guy, points for the whip for the Wicked Burn on Warcraft, not points for the Wicked Burn on Godfrey Regia. Although I do have to say that his work is infinitely more appealing while intoxicated.
All right, let's get back to the list, Taz guy. We have to pick a winner. All right, guys, Half-Life 2.
Half-Life 2. I'm sorry.
I was gonna at least try to make a point for maybe Metal Gear Solid 3 or World of Warcraft, but we'll just say Half-Life 2 if you all feel that strongly about it.
I love Metal Gear Solid 3. I think it's one of the greatest games I've ever played, but Half-Life 2 completely changed the landscape.
I'm glad we spent 40 minutes going down this list to make this very easy decision.
Yeah, sometimes it happens.
This is like, da-da-da. All right. Wait, this is interesting.
We're just, all we're doing is we're giving Half-Life 2 some context.
Yeah, true. Half-Life 2 also the first game where...
Nope.
All right.
Because we have Super Mario World and Mario 64.
But this is like the one and the next. Okay, go through the list.
Zelda, Metal Gear, Mega Man.
Wait.
Do I have to do a year or two?
Yes, you got
it. Try to do it one breath. All right, here we go.
Don't do it one breath. Just do it.
86 Zelda, 87 Metal Gear, 88 Mega Man 2, 89 SimCity, 90 Super Mario World, 91 Street Fighter 2, 92 Star Control 2, 93 Myst, 94 Final Fantasy 6, 95 Warcraft 2, 96 Mario 64, 97 Curse of Monkey Island, 98 Half-Life, 99 Counter-Strike, 2000 Baldur's Gate 2001 Halo, 2002 Metroid Prime, 2003 Prince of Persia, 2004 Half-Life 2. I did it.
Half-Life and Half-Life 2 were on the list. Valve officially rules.
Yeah. Agreed.
I don't know if they'll be making any more appearances. That's why I want to give Portal that much love.
You never know.
I mean, I do love me some Portal.
Me too.
If it came down to Portal versus Bioshock, I'd have to give the edge to Portal.
I would disagree with you, sir.
Yeah, we're not there yet. Save it for another day. All right. Okay. Embarrass me.
Oh, the quiz. Cool. Why is the 4 invisible?
I don't know. Yep. I didn't write it.
You have to highlight it when we get to it, I guess.
Well, yeah.
All right. Don't worry about it. Right. Question 1. What's the name of the priest who resides in Half-Life 2's Ravenholm?
Oh, boy. Father? George, you know? I can't think of it.
I do know.
All right, what is it?
Father Grigori.
That's it.
Yep, oddly enough, the character model for Father Grigori was based on the creative director at, was it NCSoft or ArenaNet? The guy who did all of the concept art and all of the creative direction for the game Guild Wars.
Oh, cool.
He's Father Grigori.
Huh. Strange.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Obviously, somebody was somebody's friend.
Question 2. Name the Russian scientist who Snake tries to rescue in the beginning of Snake Eater.
Oh, you asshole. That's why you're asking me that. Shite. George?
Silence is not a good sign.
No.
No. Do you got it something?
No.
No. Sokolov.
Oh,
come
Jesus.
On. Come on. Okay, question 3. The events of World of Warcraft take place how many years after the events of Warcraft 3?
Damn it. 4.
I think that might be right. Highlight it.
2.
Nope, never mind. Lol.
Gosh darn it.
Lol.
Wait, hang on. That was the question? Sokolov?
Yeah.
God damn it! That's what I get for looking up a picture of Father Grigori instead of listening to.
Right. Oh, I wonder where. I thought you were thinking.
Uh-huh.
I didn't know you were ignoring me.
No, I was thinking. It was just what I was thinking about was not what's the answer to the question. What I was thinking about was what was the question and how do I ask without sounding like I wasn't listening.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Very nice.
I just failed. But
yeah. Well.
Whatever. That's what I get for trying to provide context for inconsequential shit.
I hope that you guys fail the quiz now by 1 point. Question 4. Fable takes place in what fictional world?
Albion.
All right. And question 5. Name the other captain from Pikmin 2, the one who isn't Olimar.
Damn it. Olimar and do you know it?
Mm-hmm.
All right, go.
Luigi.
I think it's Louie, but I'll give
well,
you
in, no, in Well, oh, no, in Japan it's Luigi, because all Olimar right. is supposed to be Mario backwards.
Oh.
And Luigi is, L-O-O-J-I-E, they spelled it.
That makes sense now, when I think about their sort of physical...
Yeah.
Nature. Cool. Okay, bonus question. Name one of the fictional cities from the fictional state San Andreas.
You mean San Andreas was the name of the city?
No, San Andreas is a state. There's 3 cities
they
in the game.
They invented a state. Oh, good lord. I know this if I think hard enough. Wasn't one like San Pedro or something? George, you know for sure.
I hated that game. I don't remember anything.
No, it wasn't San Pedro. It was Los Santos, San Fierro, and Las Venturas.
All right.
Well, that didn't go well.
No.
George was picked. I think George got some of them right.
Well, that is Father Grigori.
Yeah, that guy looks a lot like Father Grigori.
There, is that enough for you to forgive me for doing that instead of listening to your so-called love question?
That's freaky.
Yeah, isn't it? These bizarre.
These visual elements are great for the podcast.
All right, well, let's do the week in gaming. Mike, you go first.
I played freaking Ghostbusters, and it's fucking awesome.
It is friggin' awesome.
Did you play it yet?
Yeah, I played it this morning.
Oh, man, busting makes me feel good. I don't know. It's just like, understand.
Where did that joke come from? I've been hearing it all over the place, and I've been so absorbed in, like, not failing out of Full Sail that I totally missed where that gag came from.
It's just a line from the song. But Ghostbusters. Busting makes me feel good.
Okay. Alright, that explains it now. Okay, that's all I need. Thank you.
Right. Yeah, you can tell, like, there's a certain, like, level of polish missing in the presentation, maybe at times. Then at other times, it's just awesome. I mean, you know, the fact that you have the voice acting and people sound legitimate. I'm surprised that Bill Murray doesn't sound like he's entirely phoning it in.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that he actually seemed like he was trying at least a little bit. It helps that his character was sort of, I don't know how you would put it.
Aloof.
Aloof and indifferent anyways, I guess. So maybe if he's doing lazy voice acting, you can't even tell. But the gameplay mechanic of, they call it, you zap, trap, and cap. So you have to weaken a ghost with your proton beam, then you kind of capture it in your beam, you have to kind of slam it around to weaken it a bit more, and then you deploy your trap and suck it into your trap. And just doing that, no matter how many times, is so satisfying.
Well, like, you read reviews for this game, and it almost sounds like people are bitching that you don't play as one of the four key Ghostbusters, that you're this random fifth guy. But I think it's awesome because, you know, it solves the problem of which one do you play as? Well, you don't. It's you. You are a new Ghostbuster. I mean, if those four guys showed up at my front door, rang the doorbell, hand me a proton pack and said, you're working for us now, I'd do jumping jacks. I don't know why, but I would.
Right.
I mean, and that's basically what this game is. When you're in the freaking Sedgwick Hotel shooting ghosts in the lobby, they've got the ghosts in their beams. They're calling for you to throw down the trap. Fuck yeah! It's awesome!
It's pretty sweet. Plus, you know, it solves a problem, like, why do we have tutorials and things like that? Like, why would one of the Ghostbusters be going through a tutorial?
Yeah.
Right. But, this makes sense. And it's just a very satisfying game to play. It's just a lot of fun, a lot of humor to it. And I don't know, it's one of those games you kind of play and you have a stupid smile on your face the whole time.
Right.
And, you know,
they nailed the soundtrack in that game, too. Oh, man. It's so good.
But it's one of those games where, like, I can understand why reviewers might feel like they're obligated to skew more towards a 7 because of some of the maybe technical flaws of the game. But there's just other aspects of the game
This game to any fan of the films, right. They're going to love it.
And, there just comes a point where, like, it just doesn't matter. If you nail capturing a ghost, then who cares? That, like, maybe the transition between cutscenes isn't great.
Yeah, and it's not. Like, it does that annoying thing where it kind of awkwardly fades out the black, then there's a pause while it loads, and then, like, the gameplay starts.
Right.
I could do without that. But right. It ultimately doesn't matter.
I can nitpick a bunch of stupid things, but it's just such a satisfying, fun experience. I just don't want to. I just want to play it more.
I'll be curious to try the Wii version.
Right. And I'm curious to see just how short it is, because that is another complaint here, is that it's short. So I want to see how short is short.
That's got 4-player co-op.
Yeah, I want to try that. That's for sure. I played Rock Band Unplugged.
Yeah, me too.
Which, it is like Amplitude Frequency, except with a better control scheme, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Cause you use left, up, triangle, and circle.
And you can remap that however you want.
But
which is
that
nice.
Works really well. Cause, like, my problem with frequency is, well, the only way you can really do it so you can get, like, chords, I guess, really well is by using the L the shoulder buttons. But that wouldn't really map visually to,
Well, it was like L1, R1, and R2.
Right,
it was weird.
It didn't work well for me, so I always did square, triangle, and circle, which was good was good for tapping, but when you had to do two at the same time, it was almost impossible.
Right.
So this works better for me in that way. And besides that, it's very much
Amplitude with a sort of Rock Band skin put over it. You know, and that, I don't mean that in a bad way. It's like, oh, you're doing the world tour and stuff like that. I almost wish that there was just a normal tour mode instead of the world tour mode. Cause world tour is much more like, well, you're gonna play the songs over and over again until you earn more songs.
Mm-hmm.
Which isn't necessarily something I wanna do in a game that's so Amplitude-like. I just kinda wanna play through, here's one song, here's the next song, here's the next song, beat that song, get the next song, kind of. That's more what I wanna do. I don't really care so much in this game about earning money and upgrading my band's look and stuff like that, you know?
One other complaint I would have is sometimes I feel like the note phrases you need to hit to get an instrument to autoplay itself are almost too short. So you like,
nah.
I feel like I get like into a groove with a certain instrument and then like it's gone. Like I almost wish there was an option to just play one instrument sometimes.
There is an option to do that.
First, there is.
Extras. And secondly, you're missing the point of the sort of Amplitude style game.
I guess, yeah.
That's not, yeah.
I know you have to switch. I just feel like you switch too much.
You switch about as much as you would in Amplitude. To be honest, I don't know.
Yeah,
I think
it's a difference between electronica music and rock music.
For me, the whole point is that the franticness comes from having to switch a lot. You can't get too comfortable with one rhythm. That's what I sort of like about these games. It's a great set list. Among my favorites are Chop Suey, Aqualung, Carry On My Wayward Son, Rock Your Socks Off. I have a lot of fun playing it.
Good deal.
Yeah, I tried playing KOTOR, which was a frustrating experience. I really wanted to play KOTOR on my PC. It just won't work. Like, I can get bit into it and it'll just crash. Yeah, it's frustrating because I don't want to play the Xbox version, which we have. I like the sort of mouse control. I like the mouse layout, but it's just not working. So that's a little sad. All right, who wants to go next?
AJ. I will.
Yeah, don't all jump up at once now, jeez.
I actually got a couple things to say. So, I got the Big Surf Island DLC pack for Burnout Paradise.
Oh, how is that?
It's phenomenal. I got every billboard, every smash gate, and every mega jump. So I'm doing the challenges
now. Wow, jeez, you didn't waste any time. Dang.
Oh, I usually don't even care about that stuff. Like, I'd never actively sought that out in the base game. But it's just so fun in this game, cause like, the design is very vertical. There's a lot of rooftops and stuff you can get up onto, which causes me, like, because I play my own music, and, like, if the Batman Batmobile chase from Batman Begins is playing, like, I'll just sit there going to myself, he's not on a street, he's flying from rooftops! Because, you know, I am, and it's fun. But they give you a new car with the DLC. It's, like, this dune buggy, and this thing just friggin' flies off jumps. And the jumps they put in it are so over the top. Like, and they're just so fun. There's one, it's called the ski jump. It's off of this cliff that launches you towards the downtown part of the island. And there's actually an achievement for achieving 4.5 seconds of airtime, and you will easily do that. There's another one, it's actually a ramp that launches you onto a ramp that launches you through the pylons of the bridge that take you into the island. They call that scoring the field goal or whatever internally at Criterion. There's like it's so over the top, and
I was just gonna say it's like the Michael Bay movie of racing games.
Pretty much, it pretty much is, and then it's cool because like every time they do one of these big packs, they kind of reskin the UI of the game a little bit. Mostly we're just playing with the color scheme, and as anyone who knows me knows, I like all things tropical. So it's kind of like this cool like tropical coral blue and orange skin over everything, and it all just looks very appealing. But, yeah, it's super fun. And also, as you unlock all these things, like doing all the billboards or all the smash gates, you get toy versions of the legendary cars. So I have toy versions so far of the DeLorean, the General Lee, and the Ecto-1. And they're hilarious. Cause it's like this, like, it's just, it looks like a toy. It's cute. It's a little stubby little car. Let's see. I don't think I told you I ended up buying it. I got, the Magic the Gathering XBLA game that came out this week.
Cool.
It is a really, really good digital translation of Magic the Gathering. It works super well, it plays well, and they don't nickel and dime you for cards. You just unlock cards by playing through the campaign. There's also a co-op campaign that we need to try that looks interesting.
Cool.
I played the demo for Sam and Max on XBLA to see how that was. It's just uses the cursor or the analog stick to move the cursor around, but you know, I like that game a lot.
I don't like it, no.
I know. I also played the XBLA demo of Wallace and Gromit, which is very good. I feel like there's an iPhone game on the top.
Oh, my George, go.
I'll let him at least see if he can remember it, so then when he can't, I can rub it in his face.
No, you know, all it is just, you know, like some of the apps got updated for the iPhone 3.0 stuff, so like Tap Tap Revenge lets you send like push notifications for challenges and things like that, so I just been fiddling with that stuff, so I guess I don't have to talk about it.
Yeah, you don't. At all. All right, go ahead, George.
Okay, so as we discussed last week during our Barkley Shut Up and Jam podcast, I am still working my way through through the original Halo.
Right.
And after a brief delay where I did nothing but play the Silent Cartographer like 3 times back to back, I then encountered another short delay where I just played Assault on the Control Room 3 or 4 times back to back. Because I am retarded for some reason.
Yes, because you're an interesting specimen.
One of these days I'll just learn to stop trying to defend those games, but...
Right, you don't have to.
That won't happen. So I've been doing that. Of course, I've been playing Homeworld in preparation for our next mission.
And then
in preparation for our possible next mission, which will probably just be a side mission. I've also been playing Pathologic. And let me tell you something. Going back and forth between Halo, Homeworld, and Pathologic is fucking weird.
I'd imagine.
Because, I mean, you know, Halo and Homeworld, they're very different games just on their own. But when you put those two games, these two, like, you know, shiny, minimally designed, colorful science fiction games, both of which I love so much, and put them next to Pathologic, it's like a joke. It's like a bad joke. It's like 3 games walk into a bar, and one of them, like, sits in the corner and hangs itself. That's, and, you know, I mean, that's what it is. Pathologic is so avant-garde. That game is too cool for school. And, like, and, you know, and I say that, and, like, I'm kind of being derisive, but I'm also, like, ironically loving it for that. And this game, like, there are 2 characters that you encounter at the beginning of the game, and you're constantly running into them, who are both just straight up Deus Ex Machina, I guess. Deus Ex Machina in the plural. And one of them is a guy in a black leotard with a white mask, and the other one is a guy in a huge cloak with a hood that looks like a raven. And you encounter the two of these two characters are always standing next to each other, and they always just appear out of nowhere. And one of these things where, like, you round a corner and they're literally just standing in front of you, waiting for you. And they will speak to you, and, like, they're kind of your tutorial, except they present it to you as though they're directing your performance in a play. They're, like, they're teaching you how to play your part in these people's lives, and they're being, and they take a very philosophical approach to teaching you how to play the game, and it's kind of fourth wall breaking, but it's also, it's strange, man. Like, if I try to describe it any more precisely, I won't be able to do it justice. It's just going to sound like I'm dictating some fever dream that I had. And, I mean, the game is definitely worth playing, and you have to play it, if only to experience just how strange it is. You can get it from Gamersgate for, like, $5.
Okay, cool. Anything else, George?
Nothing other than the fact that I still love Homeworld just as much as I did back in 2000.
All right. We'll save that for the podcast, huh? Well,
mm-hmm.
All right. Why don't you get to these releases? We'll call it a day.
All right. On the WiiWare, 3 games. Eduardo the Samurai Toaster.
Okay.
Rainbow Islands Towering Adventure.
Is that like Bubble Bobble Rainbow Island?
I think so.
Okay, cool.
And Let's Catch.
All right.
So you realize as I was reading these, I don't know if these games are good or not. There's no friggin' way to know, because Nintendo does no PR for these. There's no demos. The best you get is, like, a couple screenshots.
Yeah,
they need
weird.
A better way of promoting WiiWare games.
Yeah. I'll agree.
Virtual Console's the arcade version of Space Harrier.
I don't need Space Harrier again.
How about a Mario clock or Mario calculator for your DSi?
No,
to go
on
with your Animal Crossing clock and calculator.
Yeah, that's okay.
Oh, brother. Xbox Live Arcade, Sam & Max Save the World, a.k.a. Sam & Max Season 1, Magic Gathering, Duels of the Planeswalkers, and Rocket Riot, which I haven't tried yet, but it's supposed to be pretty good. The PlayStation Network, the PSP sees Tom Clancy's Ghost Recon Advanced Warfighter 2 brought to the PSN store.
Graw 2?
Yeah, the PSP version.
Okay.
Yeah. And then they released Metal Gear Solid.
You know, Graw was pretty relevant in the beginning of this console generation. I'm surprised Graw 3 hasn't happened yet.
I'm sure it will.
Okay.
Good old games went Tex Murphy happy. Tex Murphy 1 and 2 in a bundle, and then Tex Murphy Under a Killing Moon.
All right. What about the real releases?
For reals.
All right. Ghostbusters came out on 360, PS3, PC, Wii, DS, PS2, and there's no PSP version?
Not yet.
Oh, okay. We also got Guitar Hero Smash Hits for 360, PS3, Wii, and PS2. Sword of the Stars, Argos, Naval Yard for the PC, whatever. Terminator Salvation came out on the PC.
It was re-released on the PC to fix the broken copies.
Okay, Rise of Light, the first Great Air War for the PC. Dawn Discovery for PC and DS. We're also growing Episode 3, Muzzled for the PC.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay. Alright, that's the show, everyone. Thanks for listening to the Exploding Barrel Podcast. You can find us on squadronofshame.com or at explodingbarrel.wordpress.com. You can contact me at tokoto@squadronofshame.com.
edgeguy@squadronofshame.com.
And I think it's regulus@squadronofshame.com.
Cool.
And I mean, literally, I think that my email address is regulus@squadronofshame.com, not my email address is I think it's regulus. Because
right.
That,
I think.
I oh my God, that's that awesome! Out. I need to get that fucking email address right now.
No, you don't need to do
that. I gotta tell Beige.
Also, you can follow our Twitter account at twitter.com/explodingbarrel. Also, the newest Squadcast came up today, the Shut Up and Jam episode.
It's up!
Barkley Shut Up and
yes.
Jam Guidance. Yep.
Yeah, Pete pulled an all-nighter to get up before his trip to Toronto. So, right. Mad
oh,
props.
Man. Wow. Pete, you are the man.
Indeed. So everyone give that a listen to. I'm sure it's fantastic. I was there. It seemed pretty cool at the time.
it was amazing.
So thanks for listening, everyone. We hope you have a good week.
Oh, so yeah, I guess right. I'll see you all in like 3 weeks.
That's right. AJ's going.
Oh yeah,
you're gonna miss what? Two?
I'm missing two episodes. Let me give a quick plug for this.
No.
I am going on what is called the Alt Project. We are documenting two adventure motorcyclists as they travel the original Pony Express Trail from St. Joseph, Missouri, to Sacramento, California. If you you can go to twitter.com/altproject, which I'll be updating from my iPhone with pictures and our GPS coordinates. I've also set up a travel log. If you want to go to bit.ly-ajstravel, you can read my travel log that I'll be keeping up as I'm on the trip too, with pictures and thoughts and whatnot.
So the important thing is you're missing two shows.
Yeah.
So, okay.
So that means you have to spend hours and hours combining or compiling and filling the news and editing the podcast.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So now I'll get someone else to do that. Screw that. I'm not doing extra work.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. All right, everyone. As you guys, hope you have fun.
No, thank you.
And see you next week, guys. -1 out. Okay. Bye.
Au revoir is what I was going for.
Au revoir.
Okay.
Haha. Yeah, whatever.